Welcome back to Bitcoin Builders. Today, we are back with another interview, and this one is fascinating. I'm joined by Ray Youssef, and you might know Ray for his big, irrepressible Bitcoin presence on Twitter, or you might know Ray for his work with Paxful, or you might know him as a Bitcoin evangelist. Over the last month, things have changed quite a bit. Paxful is no more, but Ray's mission to bring Bitcoin to the global south, to the people who need it most, continues. On this episode, we talk about what happened, what he learned during his 8 years building Paxful, and especially CivKit, his new protocol to build an unstoppable open Bitcoin market. It's a great conversation, and I know you'll enjoy it. As always, Bitcoin Builders is brought to you by In Wolf's Clothing. Wolf is the first startup accelerator focused entirely on Lightning and Bitcoin. Check them out at wolfnyc.com. And now, guys, it's Wednesday, April 27th. This is Bitcoin Builders. Let's go. All right, Ray, welcome to Bitcoin Builders, man. How are you doing?
Feeling great over here, bro. I feel so good right now. You wouldn't believe it. I'm in Dubai, got the hair sticking out, just had the best month of my life. The most challenging, but I had 5 miracles in a row happen this Ramadan. I'm going to tell you guys all about it.
I love it. I love it. Ramadan Kareem, man. No, I'm so excited to have this conversation. So it's funny, like when I reached out to you, so we just started Bitcoin Builders. Obviously, it's all about sort of this, like, you know, intense growing excitement, creativity, entrepreneurship that's swirling around Bitcoin. For me, a huge, huge focus is Bitcoin around the world, not just in the US, not just in sort of developed countries. And so I knew I wanted to have a conversation with you, you know, right away to help kick off the show. And then subsequent to that, obviously, sort of everything with Paxful has come out. But I think what's so cool about having this conversation now is that it's sort of even more relevant because I think the conversation is going to be much more about sort of the mission and what matters, you know, much more than a single company. And that's, you know, I think what makes building on Bitcoin different than maybe some other sectors is how much the mission matters to the people who choose to do it. So I think it's going to be an awesome conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Yes, sir. I'm honored to be here. Thank you, brother.
So let's start with, like I said, I don't want to spend too much time. I think obviously you've been very sort of open and transparent about what's been going on with Paxful. But just for those who haven't been keeping touch, like what's the state of play right now? You know, where things are. You made an announcement recently about sort of the personal or the public trust piece. So let's try to just kind of like, you know, bring people up to speed who haven't been paying super close attention and kind of wrap that up in a little bow before we move on to some of the stuff that comes next.
Sure, guys. So Paxful is not currently in operation. The marketplace has been suspended. The wallet still works, though. And that was one of my requirements here. I've been fighting an intense battle the past 3 months because I got sued by my co-founder. We don't need to get into the details. Suffice it to say, it's kind of like a bad divorce, right? And I offered to give him the entire company, all my shares, for one Satoshi, if he would just do the right thing and make sure that, you know, these funds would be unfrozen. And for those funds to be unfrozen, there's a lot of compliance work that needs to be done. He refused my offer. He didn't take it. And Paxful's existence right now is in it's highly dubious. That's what I'm saying. So I suggest everyone with self-custody. You can't trade there. Move your money out. This has been very painful for me to lose this. This is a baby I built over 8 years. But the truth is, in November of last year, at a board meeting, we agreed that Paxful should be shut down, dissolved peacefully, quietly, everyone getting their money, employees being taken care of, keeping the website out so people can, you know, take out their funds. That was the plan that was agreed to in November. My co-founder then decided to sue me because he wouldn't get his, you know, 9-figure payday that he was craving. That's what he wanted. And he sued. We don't even know why he's suing at this point. There's really nothing there. I am the company, and as far as like trust goes, he refused to accept that. Anyway, this is painful for me to talk about. But the guy really fucked up, man. He's just driven by greed, unfortunately. That's all aside right now. Paxful's not working. There's a place for people with Paxful to go. The traders have other places to go, and they're trading right now. So the refugees are taken care of. Everything's good. The mission continues. The question is, what's next? I just lost my job as CEO of Paxful, but I feel great. I feel like a huge weight has been lifted off my shoulders because Paxful is an American corporation, a Delaware co, meaning it had to adhere to American compliance, which is extremely strict. As the CEO of Paxful, I gave compliance an unlimited budget. It was 1/4 or 1/5 of the company was compliance. We bent over backwards to make Uncle Sam happy, and it wasn't enough. And it's not just us. Coinbase has the same issue. And even, you know, forget the security stuff aside, even just a Bitcoin company, the way compliance looks is it is not inclusive. It is exclusive. It excludes people by design. So in that sense, an American company can never serve the 100%. And everyone should know here that a CEO can never overturn a compliance decision. It's actually against the law. That's really bad. Now, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of compliance here, but people need to be aware that American compliance will never be able to serve the global South, ever. It's just not going to happen. So we need to break off from all that, forget about that, and focus on the huge world in front of us and everything that we can build there. What can be built in this new world right now? Do you want me to talk about the CivKit, brother? Is the floor open for that for another 30-minute monologue or what?
Yeah. So let's do, I think I really do want to talk about the CivKit. I think that's where we're going to spend most of our time today. I guess what I want to, maybe what I want to start though, or spend a little time on before that is just sort of, you know, almost like what the experience over the last 8 years was in terms of what you learned, right? So obviously you've unfortunately had a bunch of painful lessons in the last, you know, 6 months as relates to, I mean, you knew that the US compliance stuff was a challenge. You were fighting that challenge for a long time. But I think in terms of actually understanding, you know, let's put it this way, you got to go experience Bitcoin in the real world being used in the global South in ways that sort of don't often touch the experience of, you know, folks in the US who are just hearing about it from John Oliver, right? There was a big monologue the other night about from John Oliver, the TV comedian, about how Bitcoin's only use or crypto's only use is to gamble on other crypto, right? And I was thinking about this conversation as I was listening to it. You've obviously had a very different experience, but I mean, I guess maybe to start is like, you know, when you built or you started to build Paxful, you know, how much did you know about how important people would find Bitcoin around the world versus, you know, what did you learn over those 8 years that you were building it?
Great question, brother. So in the beginning, it started out of necessity. I was homeless in New York 8 or almost 9 years ago at this time. And I was looking for a way to make money. And then lo and behold, I found out that you could trade Bitcoin, sell Bitcoin, and get these PayPal My Cash gift cards and make double the profit. I was like, no way. I can get a $500 PayPal My Cash gift card that I can use on my PayPal debit card for $250 in Bitcoin. Must be a scam. But I tried it. It worked. There's a market for that. Gift cards are $140 billion a year economy, and there's a huge secondhand trade of gift cards. So I started just like that. And then I got a place to live. I was good. And then I said, man, we got to scale this up so other people can do this stuff. Local Bitcoins was around. People were trading there. And I just said, hey, let's do a place where, build a peer-to-peer marketplace where it's specifically focused on onboarding people in mass. And gift cards are the best way to do that, because anyone can buy a gift card with cash at a gas station. So we put this thing up, and lo and behold, within like a week or two, a huge exodus of people came to us. And these people were refugees from Visa and MasterCard because, you know, this one website that was a big classified ad site lost their Visa and MasterCard merchant accounts. All these people came to us, and most of them were women, and they didn't know anything about Bitcoin. That's where I learned, it wasn't face-to-face, it was on the phone. And I was literally doing calls for 20 hours a day with people from all over the country. There's 40 million unbanked people in the United States alone. I wasn't even aware that this community existed. The first call I got was crazy. It was literally at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was working on the website. Someone called my number. I left it on the website. She found it. And I was like, hello? And it was this lady from Louisiana. I never got her name. But my goodness, this poor lady was screaming, yelling, cursing at me. She was hysterical. I could hear her children crying in the background. She was going to lose her apartment unless she got some Bitcoin. And she only needed $2.50 with a Bitcoin. She didn't even know how to pronounce it. And I was like, okay, I can help you. And I calmed her down. And I showed her how she could go to the store, and she was down to her last $13. That's what she opened up the conversation with. You bastards, I'm down to my last $13 and I need this Bitcoin. I had to help her get the Bitcoin, whatever it was, Bitcoin. And I did with a gift card. She came back with a gift card. I showed her how to trade it with someone. I got the first user journey on the phone, this normal person, non-technical, on this crummy Android phone in America, Louisiana, and I helped her get her first Bitcoin with a gift card, and she used it. And from that single interaction, I was able to create a user experience that helped the unbanked, but she most certainly was unbanked. And after that call, thousands of other calls came in. And because we could serve the unbanked in America and onboard them into Bitcoin, naturally, the Global South came to us as well. During this entire time, I was talking to people in Africa. Because I knew and I felt in my heart, I am African, I was born in Egypt. I knew Bitcoin could help them. You know, it's about helping the little guy. It's about helping people where they need help the most. So I started talking to all these Africans, you know, online, trying to figure out, trying to show them how they could get into this trade. Most of them thought it was a scam. They're quite skeptical, and they should be. But then I started talking to the Nigerians. And once I started talking the language of arbitrage to them, they got really excited. Right. So I showed them how they could get a gift card from their relative in California. You know, they buy a $100 gift card and send them the back of the card. And why is that better than Western Union? Right. Why would they favor losing 50% of the gift card value? Because that's how much they were selling it to some of these guys in China to get the Bitcoins fast. Why would anyone take a 50% loss? How could this possibly be legit? Right. That's the question on everyone's mind. Here's the answer. If you're in Nigeria and you want to get dollars, you have to buy it on the black market, right? Say you want to open up a domicile account so you can get a Visa and MasterCard that you can spend anywhere online with US dollars. So they're like, okay, you can open up a domicile account, maybe, but you have to get dollars on the black market, which go for double the official price. Was this the Central Bank of Nigeria won't sell anyone at the official price unless you're one of their buddies. So $100 becomes 50 bucks to the traditional route. Then they put that money in the domicile account, and every time they spend that money, it's at the official rate. So the money gets split in half again. So your 100 bucks just became 25 bucks if you went through Western Union. But with this, your 100 bucks is 50 bucks, and it happens instantly and allows them to convert the Bitcoin into anything. They can at that point turn around and sell it to another brother in Nigeria for a bank transfer, which clears instantly, and he can make a profit off of that because Bitcoin at the time was quite scarce. So it worked out beautifully. It's white, clean, good business that helps money move, solves more problems, like does a much better job than Western Union, and helps them get by their capital controls. This gift card business brought about $60 million a week of Bitcoin into Nigeria, and it's been happening for 7 years. And from Nigeria, it spread to the rest of Western Africa. And from there, it spread to the rest of Africa. That's how the first Bitcoins were brought into Africa, through this hack with gift cards, Chinese traders in America, Nigeria. This corridor was built by myself and a lot of the people there. They built it, but I was the one that kind of seeded this thing, started it off. And that's how the first Bitcoins got into Africa, brother, through a hack with this corridor and gift cards. And it worked like a miracle. But you have to understand, how do you sell Bitcoin? How do the Nigerians pay for the Bitcoin when it's impossible to get money out of that country? You know, it's like $10 million for a minimum order of cacao beans, their second biggest export from Lagos to Rotterdam, right? If you want to get money out that way. But I didn't have $10 million. So that was the hack, brother. And that hack taught me a lot. It taught me how to build corridors, something I just do naturally. And it showed me the real use cases for Bitcoin. Because these brothers and sisters, Nigerians, are a beat apart, bro. They are very special people. They have an incredible will and energy and business acumen that is, I think it's the best I've ever seen. I just love the energy. So they took this and they ran with it. And then these Nigerians started hacking the marketplace in a good way to do everything they wanted to do. Some people, like one guy in South Africa, he saw all these Nigerian workers in South Africa that needed to send money back home to Nigeria, but they couldn't. The regular remittance routes were highway robbery. It was up to 60%, 70% after the conversion rate. So what he did was he told them, just deposit cash into my South African bank account as Rand. He would take that, turn into Bitcoin. Then he would just sell the Bitcoin to someone in Nigeria and say, hey, send a bank transfer to this guy's mom. He basically built a version of Western Union for a specific trade route, Nigerian migrant workers in South Africa to remittance in Nigeria. He built his own little business on top of this peer-to-peer marketplace. And there's so many people that do that. I could tell you endless stories of this. Would you like to hear another one from Kenya?
Yeah, go for it.
One of my friends in Kenya is a school teacher. She sends money to her sister twice a month. Western Union will charge him anywhere from like 30 to 40%. Her sister has to wait online. So I asked her, hey, does your sister have an M-Pesa account? It's like the mobile money there. She's like, of course, 98% of Kenyans have M-Pesa. It's owned by Safaricom, the biggest telco out there, one of the biggest in Africa. M-Pesa exists in 15 countries, but Kenya, it's dominant. So I said, give me your sister's M-Pesa number, just her mobile phone. She gave me her sister's mobile phone. I went on Paxful and I did a trade. I found, hey, is there anyone here in Kenya that will, you know, buy Bitcoin with M-Pesa? And I found a guy. He was Mark in Mombasa. It's like the Miami of Kenya. And his rate, he was willing to pay me 4% over the market price. So I sent her sister 100 euros worth of Bitcoin, 104 euros worth of Bitcoin, actually, because he was paying me over 4%. She texts her sister, my friend Vicky gets a text. It's like, hey, where did this money come from? She got 104 euros worth of Kenyan shillings instantly. And I didn't lose money on that transaction. I actually made money. My Vicky saw that and she's like, what the hell? You can actually do this? You can turn Bitcoin into M-Pesa and just that your sister can get it instantly? It's like, yeah. So what did Vicky do? She just bought a whole bunch of Bitcoin and told all her friends, her school teacher friends that were also Kenyan, I'll send money back home to your family and I'll do it at 7%. She still makes a 13% profit, like off the conversion as well, but she's getting Bitcoin into Kenya and Bitcoin is scarce in Kenya. There's a 10x demand for Bitcoin in Kenya because there's infinite hunger for it there. And Vicky created her own little Western Union from Berlin to Nairobi for all her friends. That's another example. These are examples basically of hawala, money transfer. Bitcoin is really hawala 2.0. That's its ultimate use case. It's not as a speculative asset. You know, Bitcoin is not a asset class. It's a reset class. You know, the Bitcoin with a capital B will reset your thinking about money. And that's beautiful. But it can also help the money flow. It can be the clearing layer to help all the world's money trapped in whatever container it might be, a bank account, cash, M-Pesa money, whatever, it can make all that flow around. And it works for real use cases every single day. And people have been doing it for the past 8 years on Paxful, on local Bitcoins, but especially Paxful. Because this kind of community just started growing. People started teaching each other. Like I met people that would come up to me and be like, hey, Ray, I bought this car thanks to Paxful. And I'd be so proud. And then they tell me their story. Started out as an unemployed student. Now his entire family and his friends are working for him because he built one of these businesses on top of the platform. And he's helping people that just need help, whether they're in Venezuela, Russia, whatever it might be. Certain markets we can't work with in Paxful. Unfortunately, we have to close off Venezuela. We have to close off Russia. But there's a new project that just took over and came out. It's called No One's. And they're serving these people now, which is beautiful. So I'll be watching these guys and I'll see how they're building. And I'll see if I have a challenge out right now. My challenge is, well, I'm an unemployed CEO. I want a job, but I want it to be a cool job where I can change the world with people that are dedicated to winning. And winning means one thing. The world needs unstoppable free markets. That's what it needs. There need to be 1,000 Paxfuls out there, 1,000,000 Paxfuls out there. Any community that wants to put up their liquidity, whether it's a person or a whole nation state, can do so. On Nostra relays, that's the way it should be. They can't be taken down or they spawn around and spread around just like Napster did, but even better. Completely decentralized, built on top of Bitcoin. Anyone can start a relay for anything. You can put up shoes. You can put up OTC offers for money. You can do it anywhere in the world and no one can stop you. You can do it in Iran. I can't touch that because I'm an American citizen, but this is an open source platform. Anyone can build whatever they want. It's a protocol. And once someone sees some nice liquidity on your Nostra relay, right? They see a good offer. Oh, I want that. They can start a trade with you, just like they do on Paxful. But it'll happen through time, hashed time lock contracts on Lightning. This is the depth of the white paper. It's a very dense technical white paper, the sieve kit, but it is the blueprint through a three-step project. It's three phases. The first phase is the marketplace. Once we have that, anyone can trade with anyone for anything. The work of this has already begun. We're 3 to 6 months. In 3 to 6 months, we'll actually have something that people can use and connect with. There's already some marketplaces built on Nostr that are great, but SieveKit has something special about it, and that is about 8 years of learning from building a marketplace on the ground in the Global South has gone into this code base. SieveKit is basically civilization in a can, young man. You can spawn it off and have your own civilization. Civilization is about, what is it? It's about money. 99% of governance is about money. So once anyone can trade with anyone else, we'll have a massive win. And anyone can put anything they want there. No one's could use it and put their relay on there. Anyone could trade there. Local Bitcoin, they're not around anymore. Binance could do it. I had a chat with CZ about it. Everyone can be on this. But the point is that anyone will be able to take this and have their own unstoppable free market, like Craigslist, and all the escrow and everything is built in, and Bitcoin powers it all, brother. The mission is for the Global South to be trading with the Global South. We're already seeing this with the BRICS nations working together, right? On a nation state level, they're all coming together. Russia, China, Iran, all these people, Brazil, India, are coming in, South Africa. People are joining all the time. And it's great on the nation state level because they're moving away from the dollar and trading with their own money. But we, the people, especially in the Bitcoin community, have to take the initiative right now and get the streets trading with the streets all over the world. We need our own BRICS initiative. And that's what SieveKit is meant to be. It is meant to unlock the power of 6 billion invisible people connected together. How does that sound? You want one?
And now a quick word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by In Wolf's Clothing. Wolf is the first startup accelerator dedicated to Lightning. 4 times per year, Wolf brings teams from around the world to New York City to work with like-minded entrepreneurs, pushing the boundaries of what's possible with Bitcoin and Lightning. The program is designed to help early-stage startups achieve product-market fit, develop their brand, secure early-stage funding, and grow businesses that fuel the global adoption of Bitcoin. Learn more or apply at wolfnyc.com. That's wolfnyc.com. And now, back to the show. Oh, I love it. So obviously, you know, with SieveKit, so two things. I want to talk about its origins a little bit. Given how fast this white paper came out, given that you sort of talking about the building that's already got into it, you started thinking about this, you know, previous, right? This was sort of the natural next phase after everything you had learned of Paxful. And it sounds like, and you know, correct me if I'm mischaracterizing this, but it almost sounds like you built Paxful and found people using it more like a platform than you might have even imagined, right? Where people weren't just, they were just sort of executing trades. They were building small economies, not just businesses, but sort of small localized economies on top of it. Was SieveKit basically just a way to design for that use from the beginning?
Absolutely, bro. But you know, the idea started 5 years ago. I was looking at Paxful and I'm like, wow, this is great. This is blowing up. This is working. It's helping people move their money around. And at the same time, we started our, you know, compliance and moving to the United States and putting all that into gear. And I was like, wow, this is not going to work here. This is not going to, it's not sustainable. And all my experience in America has shown me that. So we need an unstoppable marketplace. Because Paxful is quite stoppable, as you can see. After that lawsuit, plus the way regulations and compliance regulators are going in America, the writing was on the wall. I saw it like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, especially. I was like, you know what? This is not going to work out here. So we needed something else. We needed to take action. So I've had this idea in my mind for about 5 years to truly build an unstoppable, completely decentralized marketplace. It's extremely difficult, right? Because you can build an order book like on Nostr, which is not that difficult. But the escrow as well, that can work too. But then the rules and the contracts and the oracles, especially, where is all that going to come from? This all came from my time at Paxful. The reason I could do this and this thing will work is because it's designed by someone who's already done this in a centralized manner. Only that person could put together a decentralized marketplace. But I was missing one thing. Brains. I'm not smart enough to do this by myself. Nowhere near, bro. And my God, my man Nick Gregory of Commerce Block This guy's a genius whose expertise is managing other geniuses. And my man Nick found some savages out there, some killers, man. He found some proper space brains. Antoine Riard, this French kid, he's young. He's like 28 or something. He is so intelligent. It is frightening. Proper space brains. He wrote the whole paper. All that tech, it's all his. This is a French dude writing in, you know, French grammar, but in English. And he did the whole thing. So I give him maximum credit for that. And there's another genius on the team, which you'll be hearing about too. Nothing much. He's working on phase two of this SIF. Because after this marketplace is alive and churning and everyone's trading with everyone, what's the next thing that we need? Because otherwise we just call it market something. Why do I call it civilization kit, right? What else do we need to have a fully baked civilization besides this unstoppable free marketplace? I open the question to you. You might already know the answer or several answers.
No, I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Great. So in my perspective, phase two needs to be a mobile-friendly Lightning wallet with decentralized IDs and reputation. Now, this is challenging from several perspectives, right? From a technical perspective, it's hard to put a Lightning node and everyone's Android phone out in the middle of anywhere that's communicating with every other Lightning node, right? It's a very chatty protocol, Lightning. So doing that is going to take some technical workings, right? Yuval's on that, nothing much. He's talking about watchtowers. We're trying to figure that out right now, but let's assume we figure it all out, and we will, God willing, put out the white paper and start building out the code base for this. Basically, we'll have a mobile-friendly Lightning wallet, non-custodial, that can live on everyone's phone. And it will have decentralized ID, not KYC. We replace KYC with KYP, know your peer. So people can actually have an identity and it can be stored under their control. If someone wants to see it, they have to sign the transaction and authorize it. And the beauty of that is that as the reputation of this score goes and is measured by the marketplace, right? All their trade is on the marketplace, determine how good the reputation is. And there'll be a web of trust based in there as well. This is where it gets, you know, the second part of it is this game theory, right? How do you align the mechanics of this living marketplace to give people a reputation that makes sense, that is not gameable, that represents their output and their tradability, their trust score, essentially. Because the better that reputation score gets, the closer you get to giving people a credit score, which means a credit line. Which means now you've solved the biggest problem. Like, how can I trust this guy? How can I put money here? If I want to invest my money, I'm only getting 2% in London. Maybe I want to put some of my money in this Rwandan textile pool or this Nigerian fintech pool, right? And people can withdraw from there that have a good reputation and they're giving back 30%. Because guess what? In Rwanda, if you want to borrow, you know, $200 to buy a sewing machine, you're going to pay $60 a month. Until you've paid it off. It's that high. It's 30% over there. And they're lucky to even get that. So that's what opens up phase three. And phase three is credit and lending, money markets. You can actually extend capital out to people. Capital can move around. People can earn. You can put people to work. You can put people to work. First, you allow people to trade. Then you allow them to build their reputation on this living, it's decentralized wallet that exists somewhere. It's basically an account they have up there. It's more than just a Bitcoin address, right? And with this reputation that you're building on the market, on this, you know, decentralized identity that you control, it opens up the third thing, which is the money can now flow. You can put people to work. They can borrow capital. They can get what they need to start doing what they need to do, whether it's buying a sewing machine, opening up a business, liquidity to be an OTC vendor, everything. Then the money will truly flow. And then we get to something that is absolutely precious, bro. It is the milestone that we need. It is a victory for humanity, and that is control of price, price discovery. We will be able to offer up an index of prices of everything, Bitcoin, the Bolivar to the dollar, based on the real trades that are happening in the real world on this marketplace. We can put all those trades out in a 24-hour average index, whatever it is. It can show the real street price for everything, FX, commodities, whatever is being traded on there, which is powerful. Why? Because if this street price is good and is respected and it has authority, then there's an alternative to the price of everything, which is set by a couple of dudes on the FX markets of the London Stock Exchange and the New York Stock Exchange and FX markets. These central bankers that control the world have a superpower. They have this weapon in their hand. Let's call it a sword. And with this sword, they can basically make anyone poor overnight. They can destroy the value of the Nigerian Naira or the Venezuelan Bolivar or the Egyptian pound, and they have. It's not because of the incompetence or economics or any of these blithering excuses that they give. It's because a small cabal, a caste of dominant men, control and can set the price of everything. They can artificially suppress the price of gold and silver, and they have been with short paper contracts. But that power won't be, it won't be there anymore. There's this other index of real trades and real prices happening every single day. The emperor will be bare and they will be exposed. Once we get to that point, then we've won. Then I can honestly say humanity has won. Once we've taken control of price discovery, even just the alternative being out there. But you see, there's a lot of plumbing that needs to be built for this to happen. And that's what CivKit is. It is fixing a broken civilization. And its ultimate goal is it's going to defend humanity from these attacks of people that can name the price of everything with just some paper.
I'm sure you're watching Argentina right now. So the difference between the price, so the blue market price, the blue dollar price, and the official central bank price of peso to dollar, it's about double, right? So this morning, I think it was 450 pesos to the dollars. What you get if you go down to Buenos Aires and they pull you down a back alley and they take you to the second floor and you trade your dollars that way, which is how everyone gets dollars if you're in BA. Is you get about double. You have to pay double the pesos to get the dollar from what the central bank says that they're worth. But they've done this interesting thing recently where they made a different price for soybean exports because they wanted to incentivize farmers to sell their soybean. And farmers weren't doing it because the official government rate was half of what the actual value of the pesos were to the dollars. So they would, if they were quoting in dollars, the amount that they would have to, because they have to instantly turn it back into pesos as soon as that money comes in, as soon as those dollars come in. And so they're like, we're not going to sell for 50% of what it's actually valued at. So the government said, okay, sure. Well, instead of 200 or 220 pesos, your soybean dollars will be worth 300 pesos, trying to incentivize them. And they're still kind of saying not a chance, right? Because the fact of them sort of arbitrarily dictating that for this one random commodity, which is an important one, obviously, it's one of the most important crops in Argentina, the dollar is going to be worth, you know, a little bit more, but still 20, 25% less than what it actually is worth. They're just not going to do it. And it's this chaotic situation where you want to talk about the emperor's, you know, the emperor having no clothes, it's laid bare there, but no one can do anything about it, really, you know? So I think just to kind of put the resonance of this, you know, the other thing that I wanted to mention is
great example.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is the this idea of your record of transactions, the record of an entity's transactions being a proxy for a trust and a credit score is something that is sort of hugely obvious once you start to think about it. And even within the fiat system, there are a couple companies that are trying to do this, right? There's a company that that basically has tried to, so what it found was if you look at sort of mobile phone top-ups around the world, people who pay as you go, which is the vast majority of people, on average around the world, this was a decade ago when I was paying close attention to them, but a decade ago, the average person around the world in most places, if they had a pay-as-you-go phone, they had 3 days a month or so that they weren't topped up. And that wasn't because they wanted to not be topped up, it's because, you know, they ran out of credit as they're on a bus to work and, you know, they didn't have time to top it up before they get to work. And then all of a sudden it's 12 hours later and they have a late shift and so they don't get to top up, blah, 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 and a day elapses. And so these guys were like, well, could we extend credit, the most basic version of credit, which is just you could keep using your phone and then it gets sort of pulled out of the next time you top up. And that becomes a proxy for a credit score. And they started doing it in a couple of Latin American countries and they've grown it. And, you know, it's sort of one of these like incredibly obvious things where these people are, you know, extremely credit worthy, but there's no proxy for that trust until you start to actually do it. So I think it's very interesting to abstract that away from this single use case of sort of, you know, mobile phone top up and think about it just in terms of sort of, you know, the transaction patterns via Lightning.
These are brilliant examples, Nathaniel. Thank you. You're a sharp dude and you see the issue. The issue is we can actually put people to work. They want to work, right? Whether they're communicating or harvesting soybeans or whatever, because the money system is broken. All this energy is locked up. It can't be put into work. There's 6 billion people in the global south. 4 billion of them are young. Half of them are unemployed. That's 2 billion people put to work if the money just flows. Like, that's the victory at the end of the line here. Imagine 2 to 3 billion people working extra. How much more that would produce for humanity. Imagine how fast the global south would rise. You'd see cities like Dubai popping up all over Africa and the global south. That's all that's needed, actually, because they're ready and willing and able to work. There's energy there. There's everything. It's just locked up, right?
How much was, you know, so you've been thinking about CivKit or things like CivKit for 5 years now, you said. How much has the emergence of Noster, how much did that change things for the actual sort of make it go, taking it from zero to one, right? From idea to a thing that might be, you know, having its time.
If Noster wasn't around, we'd still find some kind of other architecture, right? Because Noster is a glorified RSS feed. It's really not that special. Open, it's cool, and everyone's using it. I'm on Damus right now, and I love it for social media. So, hey, if us hackers like it, let's use it, right? So we chose to make it a part of the stack. So if Noster wasn't around, we would have found something else because we're doing this by hook or by crook. But having Noster there is awesome. And I think it's a very nice, it's an events protocol, which is simple. Everyone can build on. It's just, it's fun. And let's use it.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, listen, like a lot of times the innovation that's required for a new system to work isn't just the technical side. It's the critical mass or, you know, nascent critical mass, right?
Exactly. Yeah. When you're actually looking to build something for real instead of just vapor, you need to follow the energy. We're following energy here, brother. Like Noster, there's energy there. Lightning, there's energy there. Lightning community is blowing up. Discrete lock contracts, hash time lock contracts, native to SegWit and Rootkit, they're ideal for doing an escrow. And that's all that's needed. If we can make a decentralized Paxful and allow people to build thousands of decentralized Paxfuls, and they're incentivized for doing so, they're incentivized to keep that Noster relay up as they're earning some dust and sats out of all those trades. We can make an opportunity out of everything. The incoming Lightning liquidity that will be needed to create the channel, where's that going to come from? Right? You can open up a pool, invest some Bitcoin here, and it will be used to create, you know, route all these transactions and let them happen. Technically, it's funding the escrow. And it's chump change. You know, people aren't going to earn much money off those sats. But hey, in your market that you set up, you can set what the marketplace fee is going to be. It can be, you know, 1 basis point dust and sats, Lightning as usual, or you can make it 20 basis points or 100 basis points. The market master can decide. And then you'll have incentives to create all these marketplaces, build liquidity, give good service, and all built on Bitcoin. The Bitcoin project is not complete until we have unstoppable free markets. Satoshi Nakamoto, first version of Bitcoin, was following it. He had functions there, eBay-like functions for escrow and managing listings. But they were all removed later when he disappeared and to remove clutter, right? But he knew this was needed. Bitcoin is not complete until we do this.
What are the barriers between, what are the most challenging problems right now, even just in phase one, right? So you kind of laid out phase two with identity, phase three with sort of the index of prices. But what are the challenges sort of in the immediate term that are, you know, that we're still working through?
Yeah. So Team Hachiko is what we're calling it. Did you ever see that movie with Richard Gere? And the little dog? He died, man. The dog waited for him 10 years to come back on the train because he died in teaching. It's a beautiful story. Hachiko is awesome. He's the best boy ever. So, Team Hachiko is on this team. Because we're completing Satoshi's work. Like, he just left one day and didn't show up. And we're the loyal guys here trying to finish the job, right? So Team Hachiko is about 4 people right now. We're going to be getting some developers soon. Antoine is on that. So he's putting together a small Skunkworks team to actually complete the work and turn it into real code that everyone can use. Timeline on that is 3 to 6 months. So finding this team is the hardest part, but Antoine's got that. So it's going to be working right now. I give you a technical breakdown of exactly what the hardest part is going to be between the... the team can do it. They figured it all out. These guys are total fucking geniuses. The difficult part from a business perspective is going to be building liquidity on this. Mm-hmm. People have tried to do this before. OpenBazaar tried this, right? And they were building up Pez dispensers. People don't have a need to, you know, to do that on a platform that is new, hard to use, etc., has a lot of security risks. But the best market is OTC. There's a lot of business there that wants to be on an unstoppable free market. If someone starts with Silk Road 3.0 on there, I can't stop them. But the challenge is to build good, clean liquidity to get people here. That means user experience. That means interface. If you will just leave it for people to build these cool interfaces on top of it, it'll take a lot more time. It'll happen. But what I want to do is I want to design a whole user experience and give that away as a progressive web app that anyone can use. You can literally jumpstart the whole thing. That's the challenge. Making all this extremely accessible to normal people. Basically, it's decentralized Paxful, making it user-friendly. That is the main challenge. It is a UX challenge. It is a product challenge, really.
Yeah, no, it's a big one. I mean, these sort of questions are have lurked around Bitcoin and all of crypto, I think, from the beginning, but the urgency is heightened in this context. I mean, I think the good news is, you know, people who have a need are willing to learn a lot of, you know, jump through a lot of hoops to figure out UI, you know, the better you can make it, I think the better, but, you know, I think people will be receptive either way. When you think about launching this into the world, you're clearly building it to be, it's a protocol. It's not meant to be sort of a company in the same way that Paxful was a company. But do you think about, how do you think about sort of maintaining it, helping people build on it, you know, the long term? Like, is there a jurisdiction that it can exist or flourish, or does it really just need to be, you know, completed to the extent that it can and then pushed off into the ether so that people can keep using it and maintaining it sort of outside and separate from any jurisdiction in the world?
It's a network, brother. It's a network of corridors, and people will be setting up markets all over the place, especially in places that have a hard time moving money, like Russia was sanctioned. There'll be many markets opening up in Russia. You know, there's some big players in Russia right now that have taken over after local Bitcoins. I would love to get them building on this. I would like to see 20 people opening up these kinds of markets everywhere, and no one can take them down. Anyone can connect to the protocol. Someone in North Korea wants to trade with someone in Iran, they can. If they want to KYC each other optionally, they can. And it's good, clean business. Great. No one can stop them. It's permissionless, right? How I'm going to do this is, I wish I could answer the question, man, but I'm just a born hustler, bro. I like people. I like bringing people together. I like seeing people make money. They hear my message. They know I'm for real. Like, I actually believe in what I'm doing. I get off on seeing people happy. But what really turns me on is giving the finger to the dark side, bro. Fucking these guys, so fucking vain. They think they have humanity in a headlock right now. And the truth is, we don't have much time, brother. We have the next 7 years to make this thing work. The urgency is on. We have spent the past 13 years in Bitcoin trying to replace banks with wallets. It has not worked. It has not gotten Bitcoin out the door. And we have been hit with all this junk, you know, DeFi, this, that, all yield farming, all these ICOs, all this junk that has distracted us. Enough of that, brother. We don't need any more of that. So we need to go. These next 7 years, the mission is 1 billion. My mission is 1 billion citizens. And a citizen is a daily engaged user. Daily engaged, meaning Bitcoin is not enough. Crypto is not enough. Even fintech is not enough for those kinds of numbers. Most companies like Binance or Paxful, they'll be lucky if 2-3% of their user base is monthly active. But I'm talking daily active. How to do that? That is the challenge. That's where messaging comes in. Because ultimately, the best model to follow is not the Bitcoin model of replacing banks with wallets. It's what the telcos are doing, man. They are the connection to the streets. That's where we need to get to with this eventually. I haven't ever raised money in my life, but I will soon. And my goal will be to bring this to the streets and to do what the telcos do better. And Bitcoin will be powering it all. I'm thinking on some Lex Luthor level, kind of level right now, bro. And the only difference between me and there's a lot of guys that think on this level, how do you actually bring it to the streets and get people using it, get people to trust it? I can talk about technology all I want, but at the end of the day, brother, I swear to you, business, it's about who you're doing business with. It's not just about the face, but who's the heart? Who's the warrior that's protecting these users' funds? Who's the man that is accountable? And that's me, brother. I am no prophet. I am no messiah. I'm just a nerdy dude from Hell's Kitchen. But people trust me because I've set a good example. I'm not perfect, but I try and I'm transparent and I actually give a damn. I truly do. That's going to be a big part of this recipe, brother, the CEO branding. Currently, I'm unemployed, of course. But I can do it, brother, because God is with me. I truly believe that. And the people of the Global South trust me. And there's no replacement for that. You know, Vitalik won the trust of these developers through his, you know, his kind of charisma. Well, I have a different kind of charisma and I have a different target. But the Bitcoiners will be with me, brother, and they will shift over to this. There's an amazing community of Lightning development happening right now. It's just not being used because the main use case is trade. And we need to get all these bright minds on that. My plan is to grow this to such a level that we get the best talent that all went over to DeFi land and they start coming over to us and they start building on this. And it's all on Bitcoin. That is my dream in the next 7 years. 1 billion citizens, brother.
Ambitious goals are, you know, there's a famous quote, small ambitions have no power to stir men's souls, right? You gotta name a goal and make it big. And you know, I think that one of the challenges is that people design for and focus on problems they've experienced. And so a lot of the energy has just gone into not building for this use case, right? You kind of were a bridge in terms of your personal experiences and where you had built your life to lots of different worlds. I think that folks are now thinking about Bitcoin in these global contexts in a way that they might not have been, right?
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. I need help. I'm putting it out right there. I need help to make this happen. Team Hotchko needs help. Now we've got, I'm funding it, like the code protocol is going to be done, right? But at the same time, we need to grow peer-to-peer as an industry right now. There's so many amazing products here. There's no ones. There's Peach, which is still in beta, but looks amazing. There's, you know, RoboSats. There's all these other architectures that are being written up right now. This is the biggest problem in the world. And now that we have Bitcoin and this, you know, non-turning complete scripting language, smart contracts, right? Now that we have this on Bitcoin plus Nostr, we can actually do this now and deliver it. I can keep talking, brother, but you asked some really good questions, bro. Like, what is... I'm trying to figure out where to take this right now, but maybe you have a question for me because there's something I just want to spill right now. But first you go, otherwise I'll monologue for 10 minutes.
No monologue. I want to start to try to kind of wrap it up towards the future orientation and how people can help anyway. So feel free.
Well, people can donate, but we don't really need the money right now. We're setting up a foundation in Switzerland for CivKit to handle any of the donations that are coming in. But, you know, the team is really together right now. They're funded. They're going. We just need to grow peer-to-peer in general, which means we need to support all these amazing players out there. I have some notoriety in the space, some influence, which is great. I want to support all these peer-to-peer markets. I see no one as competition. No one's. But, yeah, giggle. We'll see where I end up. But I have a plan, and I'm looking for a team that can do that plan. There's teams out there. I'm willing to help them all. I see myself as someone that is championing the Global South and solving the biggest problem in the world. I call it economic apartheid. That's the situation that we're in. People have to understand this first and foremost. The reason why all these black, brown, yellow people, white people too, are poor, it's not because they're lazy or dumb. is because they can't use their money. They're all trapped in a little prison. I'm an Egyptian. I was born there. Egypt is a prison for money. You can't get your money out. My mother lost half of her life savings. She might lose it all, right? Because we can blame the country and say, oh, they were dumb. They messed up their policies. But really, there's a system that makes sure that they can't win. And if they can't win, their people can't win. And the pain travels downwards. It doesn't trickle down. It pours down. That's what economic apartheid is. It is a system that guarantees that 6 billion people will remain poor and their civilizations will remain suppressed. I'm trying to solve this problem. And I need some help, brother, but I don't know what kind of help I need right now, honestly, because I'm unemployed. So I'm just having a lot of conversations and spreading this love, and I'm just gathering people to help me. So if you're hearing this message and you want to solve the biggest problem that has ever existed in humanity, if you want to take back control of the money pillar, which these evil men have taken back, taken first and corrupted first, then you can help me out and join Team Honchico. Reach out to me. I'm Ray Paxful pretty much everywhere. That name will probably change soon since I'm not with Paxful anymore. And by the way, I've actually taken my Bitcoins off Paxful right now. I'm just putting it out there to everyone, always self-custody. I waited. I kept my money in Paxful until I could ensure that everyone, as much as possible, got their money out. I feel good about that. I don't know where I'm going to be in May, but there might be something happening. I'm going to be in the Miami Bitcoin Conference. Is that where you are, brother? Where are you calling from right now?
I live north of New York, so I'm in the Hudson Valley, although I will probably be in Miami as well.
All right, I'll see you there. So guys, I'm just trying to solve the biggest problem in the world. I need help to do this. The Civ Kit is live. It is being worked on. There is the cavalry coming. We have, you know, Paxful built up 12 million people as users, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Binance is 120 million people. But the truth is we haven't even reached a fraction of 1% of the people that need this help. Operation Chokepoint in the USA is just a flavor of what's to come. The West will not allow this to happen. They are governed by dark powers that do not want to see the rest of the world succeed. Do you think the rulers of France, Macron, wants to see all these 15 nations under the Central African franc break free from their control? They don't want to see that, but guess what? It's going to happen. Because all of these people right now are looking for other options. They're all trying to figure out who can they trade with? How can they get around this SWIFT system? And eventually, how can they have their own system of money? How can the money flow? And the solution is there. Paxful was stopped. CivKit will be unstoppable. And all the services that will be built on this will be unstoppable. So if you're in peer-to-peer, you have a platform, it's doing great, you want it to do better, whatever it is, reach out to me. Let's work together to get all of this liquidity in an unstoppable way on these Nostr relays with CivKit. And we can build a plumbing network and we can share liquidity and we can build corridors. This is the key. And if you are a hustler out there and you are listening to this and you want to make some money with no ceiling and you want to help the world heal, then reach out to me and let's build some corridors together. I'll give you guys an example of one corridor I just learned recently by being here in Dubai and talking to some friends in Abu Dhabi. There's apparently a huge corridor. It's a delta between Khartoum in Sudan, Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, and Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. People have a very hard time now getting money out of Saudi Arabia. The system is really clamped down. So the Saudi Arabians are hungry for Bitcoin and Tether, any way they can move their money out. There's the same situation in Khartoum. And there's additional levers there with gold and other resources that have come to Dubai and are traded. A smart hustler would look at that and say, hey, there's a corridor right there. I'm going to go to each one of these places, find out who's making the moves, find out what the problems are. They're going to use their influence to get these guys trading, and they can build a business right there. And we can have another massive corridor built, and it's powered by Bitcoin. And there's 100 unlimited amounts of corridors that can be built. Like the kimchi premium, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
There's these premiums all over the world, in Saudi Arabia, in Khartoum, in Sudan, wherever it is. And if you come in there and you solve that and you build a business around that, you enable trade to happen, not only will you make money, but you're going to help a lot of people get about doing the work that they want to do. You're going to create wealth. I see a world where in 7 years, if we make the money flow around, we will unlock the potential of the global south, of all those brilliant, ambitious young people that just want to go to work. We will be doing God's work, brother. And I truly believe in 7 years this will happen, because we have everything now. This is the first time in human history we have everything right at our fingertips. We got the internet. We got mobile phones all over the global south. We've got Bitcoin. It's been around for 14 years. It hasn't gone down. It has an amazing community behind it to defend it to the death. Real money's flowing with it. Now we just need to create this unstoppable free marketplace. I created a stoppable one. Now we're going to make it unstoppable. We're going to bring us all together. I don't have all the answers, but I see a path. And if you want to help, reach out to me. Let's talk. I'm in the time of my life right now, brother. I feel great. I might have gone, you know, lost my job, lost my company, but I can't imagine feeling better than I do right now. I'm full of hope and I'm excited.
Well, listen, I think it's hard not to be excited when you're moving from identification of a problem to actually being able to work on the solution. And even if the challenge or the transition is painful, and you know, you have to kind of live through the decay and destruction of one system, you know, you're living and seeing the other side, and I think it's really exciting. So listen, well, you know, we can, for anyone who is interested, come join the Breakers Discord. We'll set up a chat that can be for people who want to see how they can contribute to this, even if it's just because they know people who want to kind of work on one of these corridors back wherever they're from, and we'll see what we can do. But Ray, awesome to have you on the show. So excited for what you're building, and can't wait to check in a few months to hear all about all the progress.
Yeah, send all the mad geniuses my way, bro, and the shadowy super coders too. I got a place
need
for
them all.
Team Hotchko needs you, brother.
All right, guys, back to NLW here, just for a quick wrap up. The quote that I butchered in that conversation was, "Dream no small dreams, for they have no power to stir men's souls." There are actually a bunch of variants of that quote flying around, one from Goethe, another apocryphally from Chicago city planner Daniel Burnham, who said, "Make no little plans." It's one of those quotes where the resonance of the truth underneath it is much more important than the specifics of who actually said it. After that interview, you can tell that Ray is a dream no small dreams person. This ambition to build CivKit out to a protocol that can create free, open, and unstoppable Bitcoin markets around the world is a huge one. I think it's the type of ambition that has to be big to get people excited about it. But I also think one of the things that's so powerful about making a run at it is that it almost can't fail. In the sense that, sure, it could not reach the full extent of the ambition of the people building it, but let's imagine that hundreds or even just dozens of these market corridors open up that allow groups of people to move money and value more easily, cheaply, and quickly. Is that a failure? No. Certainly, the bigger the network gets, the more there is a network effect, but it doesn't rely on a network effect to help people. Anyway, I think it's a super interesting project, and I'll certainly be watching it closely. If you want to learn more or get engaged, we'll open a discussion about it in the Breakers chat. Look in the show notes for a link to that Discord. And that will do it for this episode of Bitcoin Builders. I want to say thanks again to my sponsor, In Wolf's Clothing, Wolf, the first startup accelerator for Bitcoin and Lightning companies. Go to wolfnyc.com to check them out. And until next time, let's build.